We're holding on your bays, omid bays, 11 lines from the bottom. Continuing with the story of Moshe after he was born and placed in the Nile. So Bas Pare had found the basket in the Nile, and Moshe was crying, and she said, "This is a Jewish baby." So then the pasuk continues, "Vatomer achoser abas pare," his sister Miriam says to the daughter of Pare, "Ha'elich, do you want me to go v'karasi loch isha meinekes mina ivrios and call for you a nursing mother from among the Jewish women?" So umayshna meivrios. So the question is, why davka is she offering to find from one of the Jewish women? After all, in other words, it implies that it can't be a goyish woman, and isn't there the problem that she's going to blow her cover? Okay, I mean, she knows now that this is a Jewish woe, that this is a Jewish baby, but still. So Malamachech Zeruhu L'Moshe Kol HaMitzvias Kulan V'la Yonach. So this teaches us that she brought Moshe around to many different goyish women, and he didn't want to nurse her. So now, therefore, so Miriam says, you know what, since it's not working out with any of the goyish women, do you want me to call a Jewish one? Omar, and the reason is because he said, meaning the Pashto Hashem said, is it right? Is it right that the mouth that in the future is going to speak with the Shechina should nurse from a Tomei thing? So it's not, and therefore, in other words, Hashem caused that baby Moshe did not want to nurse from any of the goyish women, and therefore Miriam had to offer to go bring a Jewish woman. There is in halacha, you have this, by the way. Marsha brings at some length over here from a medrash and discusses it that the lahalacha, actually, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that when possible, a Jewish baby should not be nursing from a goyish woman anyway. It may be outright also where there's a Jewish one available, but Tosfos explains the fact is it was a dangerous situation over here. Right now, Bas Pare thinks this is probably a Jewish kid based on what we said so far, that we learned yesterday that she saw that he had a mila. But nevertheless, it wasn't certain. So by forcing the matter to Davka to begin with, go find a Jewish mother, it would put him in danger. So therefore, they first tried the goyish women. It didn't work out. But this is al pi halacha, actually, when possible, a Jewish baby should not be nursing from a goyish woman for that reason. So he shouldn't be nursing from a dover tummy. Anyway, this is like what it says in the pasuk. It's mi yoda day of a gomer. The pasuk says, "To whom will Hashem teach knowledge?" And the pasuk continues, "Gmulay mecholav atikei mishadayim." To those who are weaned from the milk, and to those who are removed from the breast. So, what does that mean? Lemi yoda deya, to whom is Hashem going to teach understanding, the understanding of Torah, or lemi yovin shmua, and whom is Hashem going to make to understand, to comprehend the things that he hears from Hashem, is going to be the one ligmule mecholav ula atike mishadayim, only to the one who's weaned from the milk and removed from the breast, meaning meaning Moshe, who refused to drink the milk and to nurse from the breast of a goyish woman, he was the one who could receive the Torah from Hashem. So therefore, even when he was a baby, Hashem prevented him from doing that. And the double expression Yoda Deya and Yovin Shmua and Gmule Mecholav Atikim Mishadayim, Marsha explains, refers to Torah Shebichsav and Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, respectively. So both of them, the fact that he acted in this way made him the appropriate person to receive the Torah. Next, the pasuk continues. Vatomer lo Bas Pare Leichi V'Gomer. So Bas Pare says to Miriam, "Go ahead." And the pasuk says, "Vatelech Alma." It says the girl went. Now, up until now, it's been calling her Achoso, which means his sister. All of a sudden now, it calls her Alma, which means the young girl. So what does that mean? It means that she went very quickly like a young girl with her full strength, meaning even though we learned yesterday that when Miriam was younger, she was very weak and sick, but now she pulled herself together and went with strength and went quickly like a kid running to get it done as fast as possible. Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani Omar Ha'alma Shehel Lima Estvareah. Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani says another meaning of Ha'alma is that she hid her words, that she didn't inform Basia that she is Moshe's sister and that the woman she's going to be bringing is Moshe's mother, again, because she didn't want to blow their cover. She didn't want to put everybody in danger over there, because then everybody's going to know that that Basia found a Jewish baby and that she's saving. So she hid that, and therefore she's called Ha'alma Meloshin Halem, that she hid it. The pasuk continues. Vatomela Bas Pare Helichias a Yelad Azeh. So Bas Pare tells Yecheved, take this baby and nurse him. What's the word Helichi? Omer Abchama Brab Chanina Misnaba Ve'eni Adas Ma Misnaba. Bas Pare was saying there a nevuah without actually knowing what she's saying. In other words, Hashem put words in her mouth that end up having an extra meaning beyond what she intended. When she says "Hey Lichi," means "Hey Shalichi," here, this one is yours. So she didn't even realize that this is Yecheved's own baby. But Hashem caused her to say the words that she actually to imply that this baby actually belongs to her. Obviously, she wasn't speaking Lashon Kodesh. Ben Yehoyada points out, apparently, whatever she said in Egyptian, also Hashem caused it to have this double meaning. And then when Hashem dictated the Torah to Moshe later and translated what Bastia had said into Lashon Kodesh, then he kept that double meaning. Bas Pare continues, Vani eten eschorech, I will pay you for nursing this baby. So Amar Rav Chama Rav Chanina, loy dayim at tzaddikim shemachzirim lahen abedosan. It's not enough that tzaddikim get their lost thing restored, like here where Yecheved figured that she had lost Moshe and then he was restored to her. Elosh nursim lahen scharan. But look at that, Hashem arranges they even get paid for it. So that's that. So Yecheved nursed Moshe and raised him, and eventually, of course, as the pasuk goes on to say, she brought him back to the palace, and Bastia continued to raise him. So now, talking more about Miriam, later on, by Kriyas Yamsuf, the pasuk says, "Vatikach Miriam haNeviya Achos Aaron." Remember, it says Miriam the Neviya, the sister of Aaron, took a tambourine in her hand and started leading the women in singing Shira. So the question is, why does it say Achos Aaron? V'loy achos Moshe, isn't she Moshe's sister as well? Amr of Amram, Amr Rav, Amr of Nachman, Amr Rav, Melamed choisa misnabak she achos Aaron. This teaches us that she was saying nevuah when she was only Aaron's sister before Moshe was even born. So in other words, ha-neviyah, achos Aaron, means that she was the neviyah already when she was a girl, already when she was a little girl, before Moshe was even born. And what was her nevuah? Va'omeres, and she, in fact, the Gemara in Megillah lists her as one of the seven nevias. Va'omeres, and she was saying, Asida imi shetelet bein shemashiach as Yisrael. My mother in the future is going to give birth to a son who's going to save the Jewish people. So now, by Kriyas Yamsuf, which was the culmination of that saving, is when the pasuk makes mention of that point. But the Kibin Shinolad Moshe, so now when Moshe was born, Nismalakul Abayas Kula'ur, the entire house became filled with light. As we learned yesterday, that was when it says Vatero Isiki Tovhu, one of the meanings of that we said was that the house was filled with light. Omad Avio Nashokal Rosha, so her father Amram stood up and kissed her on the head. Omad Abiti Niskaima Nevuah, so he says, my daughter, your Nevuah has been fulfilled. In other words, it's beginning to be fulfilled. This must be the baby you're talking about. But then when they put Moshe into the river, and as far as Yecheved and Amram knew, that's the end of it. They didn't know that Hashem is going to bring Basia over there to save him. Omad Aviyah b'tofchal Rosha. So her father stood up and hit her on the head. A different girsa that it brings on the side over here is that it wasn't her father, it was her mother. Was disappointed in her, kind of. He says, my daughter, where is your nevuah? Obviously, your nevuah is not coming true after all. And so, in fact, Maharsha says it was the mother. The to begin with, when we said before that Halima Dvareha, she hid her words, Marsha explains, it means not only from Bas Parai that she didn't tell her, I'm going to bring the child's mother, but also she had hid her Nevuah from her mother. Only her father knew of it. So now her mother, who didn't even know of the Nevuah, so she was disappointed and she said, where is your Nevuah? That's why the Pasuk says, so that's why the Pasuk says that his sister stood from far off to see what's going to happen with him, meaning she wanted to see what's going to happen in the end with her Nevuah, and that's particularly why she stood there. And then, as the Mishnah had told us, she waited around for Moshe, and in the course of that, the whole Jewish people waited around for her when she was sick and had saras. Okay, the Mishnah had given another example of midah keneged midah, how Hashem rewards people midah keneged midah. We said Yosef zocha b'cholah. We said that Yosef buried. We said that Yosef took the initiative to bury Yaakov, and then midah keneged midah, Moshe Rabbeinu was involved in taking Yosef's body out of Mitzrayim and getting it buried. So the Gemara asks, so let's analyze that story of Yosef going to bury Yaakov. The Maishna Me'ikra Dichtiv. Now, what's the difference? That to begin with, the Pasuk says, Vayal Yosef Likber Asaviv. Yosef went up to bury his father, Vayalu Itoi Kal Abde Farei V'Gomer, and all of the servants of Paroi and so on and so forth went with him. So we see that, and then it continuing, then so you have, so it mentions Avde Paroi, Vahodur, and only after that does it mention Vachil Beis Yosef, Echo Beis Aviv, only after that does it mention all of Yosef's family and his brothers and the rest of his father's family. So we see that it puts the Mitzriim first before his brothers, or Maishnal of a Seif, what changed further on, Dichtiv, Vayoshev Yosef Mitzrayim, Ahu Vahechav, Vahodur, Vachol Olam Ite Likber Asaviv. Then it says at the end, Yosef returned to Mitzrayim, he together with his brothers, and only then does it mention and all the other ones who went up to bury his father. So it's putting his brothers before the Mitzrayim. So why first are the Mitzrayim first? But obviously Yosef is first, fine, because he's the prime minister. But why in the earlier Pasuk are the Mitzrayim before the brothers, and in the later Pasuk are the brothers before the Mitzrayim? So like this, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ad Shalai Ro B'Chvoidan Shal Yisrael, before the Mitzrayim saw the glory, the honor of the Jewish people, Loi Nogu B'Hen Kavod, so they didn't treat them with respect, and therefore they put them last. Well, it was Seif Shalro B'Chvoidan, but in the end they saw the glory, the honor that was given to the Jewish people, as we're going to say in a second, Nogu B'Hen Kavod, then they started treating the Jews with more respect, and then they let them go first. So what happened? Dichtib. So the pasuk says, "Vayavoyu at Gordon Ha'otad." So in the description of the Levaya, it says they came to Gordon Ha'otad. Now, literally, Gordon means a threshing floor where you thresh grain or other kinds of crops, and otad means thorns. So the question is, "Vachi Gordon Yeshlo La'otad." Do thorns have a threshing floor? You don't harvest thorns and thresh them. So why was the place called that? And if it was just a matter, Marsha adds, if it was just a matter of that it was surrounded by thorns, as they often do, then fine. They wouldn't name the place after the fence that surrounds it. And anyway, if that's a regular thing to do, because you don't want animals coming in over there or whatever, then there'd be no reason to name this one particularly that. So rather, Amar Rabba Bohu Malamed Sheki Fuhuk Sarim La Aron Esher Yaakov Kegoren Zeshem Akifim Lai Otad. What happened was that Yaakov's coffin was surrounded with crowns, the way that a threshing floor is surrounded with thorns. You usually put when you have a threshing area, you put a hedge of thorns around it, which serves much the same purpose as barbed wire does nowadays to keep people out. So therefore, so now Yaakov's coffin was surrounded with crowns, the way that a threshing floor is normally surrounded with thorns. So what happened? How did that come about? Shabo b'nei Esav b'nei Yishmael b'nei Keturah, because the descendants of Esav and Yishmael and Keturah came, and the Gemara interjects Tana, we learn in a Braisa, They all came for war. Don't think that originally they came to honor Yaakov. To begin with, they actually came. They were intending to go to war to prevent Yaakov from being buried in the Ma'aris Machpelah. But Kivin Shiro, Kisra Shal Yosef, Tolu Ba'arona Shal Yaakov. But then, when they saw Yosef's crown hanging on Yaakov's coffin, and they realized how great Yaakov is, and that even Yosef, prime minister of Mitzrayim, is showing him such honor. Not the Kulim Kisraim, but Tolu Ba'arona Shal Yaakov. They also took off all of their crowns and hung them on Yaakov's coffin. They meant to represent with that, like you have the pasuk in connection with the churban, nafla teres reishenu, the crown of our head has fallen down. So therefore, they felt the same way now that they also felt that Yaakov had passed away, especially because in his schos the famine had stopped, etc. And therefore, they all hung their crowns on his coffin. So Tana, and we learn in a brisa, Shloshim v'shisha ksarim nitlu ba'arona shel Yaakov. 36 crowns were hanging there on Yaakov's coffin. Why 36? So Rashi says that you have Yishmael had 12 sons who all became princes. So that's 12 so far. Now first you have Yosef's crown. That's the first one. Then you have 12 from Yishmael, which makes another. So altogether you're up to 13. And then Rashi calculates that you have altogether in connection with Esav, it mentions 23 alufim, 23 chiefs or minor kings. And Rashi goes into a little bit of detail that actually, if you count the names at the end of Parashas Vayishlach, you seem to have 25, but two of them are actually counted twice. So therefore, you end up with 36. Tosfos Shantz on the side disagrees with that because they point out, so what happened to Keturah? We don't have any of the descendants of Keturah represented. So therefore, they calculate differently. They calculate only 14 for Esav, and then and 14 for Esav, 12 for Yishmael, and nine from Keturah. So or 10 from Keturah. Actually, they say the 36 is besides Yosef. So it means 36 of Bnei Yishmael and Bnei Esav and Bnei Keturah. There were 36 crowns plus there was Yosef's. Anyway, the point is, we're saying once the Mitzrayim realized how honorable the Jewish people are, that all of these Goyish nations are honoring like them like that, then also they started honoring them. And on the way back to Mitzrayim, they let them go first. The pasuk continues. Vayisped Yerusha misped gadol v'chavid ma'od. The pasuk continues that they made there a tremendously great mourning, a very, very great and covered, very heavy. So what does that mean? Tana afilu susim v'afilu chamorim means even the horses and even the donkeys were also in mourning. So what does that mean? It can mean that Marsha says it means that they dressed them in clothing for mourners as well. And then there's a different explanation. Rabbi Yaakov Emden explains, and then various Achronim explain further from that, that the horses and the donkeys and whatever were also making sad noises. We know that when Yaakov passed away, the famine began again. So like, so to speak, the animals are also feeling deprived. Or also the idea would be that because everybody was so busy with the funeral, they forgot to feed the animals, and therefore the animals are neighing and making noises out of hunger. So it seemed as though they were also mourning for Yaakov. So that's God of Chavid Ma'id. Me'ilu is in parenthesis over here. The pashtos it means that me'elu it says on the side over here, so maybe it means actually the ones of all the nations, all the horses and donkeys and whatever of Esav and Yishmael and whatever were also mourning. Anyway, kivin shehigiyu l'ma'aros machpelah, then when they came to the ma'aros machpelah, also Esav kama akiv, then Esav came and was trying to stop the burial. So his children may have honored Yaakov and hung their crowns on his coffin, but he wasn't having any of that. Amalahen, he says to them, listen, we know the place is called Mamre Kiryas Ha'arba Hichevron, Mamre, which was originally named after one of Avram's friends, the city of four, which is Hebron, V'amre Yitzchok Kiryas Arba Zugas Hoyu. And Rabbi Yitzchak says the reason it's called Kiryas Arba is because there were four pairs of people buried in Ma'aris Machpela, four couples. Adam Chava, Avram, Basara, Yitzchak, Berifka, Yaakov, Aleya. That's who ended up being buried over there. But now, before Yaakov is being buried, Esav is protesting. He's saying, So there were two spaces left in Ma'aris Machpelah. So Yaakov used one of them to bury Leah. Vahai depayish didihu. The one that's left is supposed to be mine. After all, Yaakov and I are brothers, and we're supposed to share the. And we both inherited Ma'aris Machpelah from Yitzchak, and therefore, if he got one part of it, then I get the other part. So I should get to be buried there. So they told him, what do you mean? You sold it to Yaakov, as the Gemara is going to show soon, that he did that. So Esav says to them, forget about the Ma'aris Machpelah. They tell him, look, you sold your Bechorah to Yaakov. So with that, you sold your portion in the cave. He says, no. Sure, I sold the Bechorah. I agree that I don't have the portion of a Bechorah, a double portion. I never sold the chelik of the poshut, so therefore at least Yaakov and I should be so at least fine. Yaakov should have two thirds, and I should have so fine. So we divide the estate into three portions, and Yaakov will get two, and I get one, but I still get something. So I should have a place in the Ma'aris Machpelah. So they told him, yes, as a matter of fact, when it comes to the Ma'aris Machpelah, you sold off everything. You didn't keep anything for yourself. And we know that because Yaakov himself says, when Yosef is telling Paroi that he needs to go bury Yaakov, he quotes Yaakov. He says, "Bekivri asher korisi li," that I want you to bury me in my grave, which korisi for me. Now, the simple meaning of korisi would be that I dug. But it doesn't mean that, because the Ma'aris Machpelah had been dug out long before. So it can't mean, in other words, that Yaakov actually dug out the cave. The word korisi, which the shorish of it is kira, means a loshin of selling. She came to krake ayom kuren the mechira kira. As we find in the cities near the sea, where the pashtos in Eretz Yisrael or wherever it is, where they call selling kira. So therefore, when he says asher korisi li, he means that I bought the Ma'aris Machpelah. I bought the full right to Ma'aris Machpelah from Esav, and therefore they tell Esav now you therefore have no more rights to you have no more rights to the Ma'aris Machpelah. In fact, Rashi mentions there's a pasuk even that mentions that uses that lashon for akrehali, means I bought her for myself, and so we see also that the word kira means buying. Anyway, you sold it. Esav tries to play dumb. He says, okay, show me the bill of sale. They told him that bill of sale is in Mitzrayim. So they said, Uman Nazel. So who's going to go get it? Nazel Naphtali. Let Naphtali go to Kaloki Ayalta, because Naphtali is fast like a deer. Dichtiv, Naphtali ayola shlucha, as Yaakov had given him a bracha. Naphtali is a fast deer, hanoisin imre shofar, which gives forth beautiful words. So they told Naphtali to run back to Mitzrayim to get it. Omer Ababohu, al tikri imre shofar, ela imre sefer. So in fact, don't read imre shofar, that he gives beautiful words, but rather Imre Sefer, he gives words of the Sefer, in other words, that he went to actually go find that bill of sale in order to make everything work out. So we see they sent him to get it. Now, what happened while they're waiting for Naphtali to come back? Chushim Brei de Don Tamon Hava, Chushim, the son of Don, we know the Pasuk tells us in the family tree in Parshas Vayigash, Uvnei Don Chushim, so he Tamon Hava, he was there, V'yakirin Le'udnei, and his ears were heavy, meaning he was deaf. So he didn't hear everything that was going on. This that Esav is protesting. All he saw was that Esav is standing over there and blocking them from going into the Maris Machpela. But he doesn't know exactly what's going on. Omrulahu mai hai. So he asked, what's going on? Omrulah koma akub hai. So they told him, this guy, Esav, is trying to prevent the burial. Ad osi Naphtali out of the Mitzrayim, until Naphtali gets back from Mitzrayim and brings the bill of sale that Esav had sold off his portion of the Maris Machpelah. So Omalahu, so Hoshim says, where the Ad osi Naphtali out of the Mitzrayim, the Abba Mutu will be Zoyin. So what, until Naphtali gets back from Mitzrayim, is my grandfather supposed to be lying over there without in Bizoyin without being buried? In other words, everybody else, like, you know, they even though they obviously weren't believing Esav's, claims, but still it had a certain effect on them that they weren't therefore so zoriz to do anything about it. Chushim, who didn't hear anything about it, all he sees is that Yaakov is not being buried and Esav is preventing it. Shoko Kulfa, so he took a club, Machia Reisha, and hit Esav on the head and killed him. Actually, Tosfos Shantz brings from other places where it seems that that Yehuda is the one who killed him. So Tosfos Shantz says maybe in fact there were both of them. Maybe both of them together are the ones who killed him. Mefarshim say that maybe what it means is that when Chushim struck him that blow, maybe he didn't actually kill Esav. He only wounded him or only stunned him or whatever, and then Yehuda came and finished him off. Anyway. Natran Ene, from the force of the blow, Esav's eyes fell out, v'naflu akara de Yaakov, and fell on Yaakov's feet. Paschinu Yaakov la'ene v'achich. Yaakov opened up his eyes, Yaakov v'nu le'meis, we say, so he was actually still alive, and he laughed. V'hainu dechtiv, this is like what the Pasuk says in Tillim, yismach tzadik ki chozem nokom, the tzadik will be happy when he sees the vengeance. Pa'om of Yirchatz v'dam ha'rosha, he will wash his feet in the blood of the Rosha. So here you literally have that it came true because the eyes fell out and the pashtus blood came out with them as well, and it fell on Yaakov's feet, and like so to speak, his feet are washed with it. But at that moment, Rivka's nevuah came true that she had said many years earlier, dichtiv, where she says to Yaakov, when she's telling him to run away to Lavan, she says, Lama eshkal gam shnechem yom echad, why should I be bereaved of you? Why should I have to lose both of you, Yaakov and Esav, on one day? So she was saying, so it wasn't really a nevuah. She's not actually one of the seven nevuahs, but it's another one of these things of nibah v'eni adem man nibah. That she was saying a nevuah without even really knowing that it was a nevuah. Marsha points out she's not one of the seven nevuahs, but she was implying that they were going to pass away on one day. Now it's true, in the end they didn't pass away on one day, because this was by Yaakov's funeral, which was a couple of months after he had passed away, because between they embalmed him and whatever, but still, but they were both buried on the same day, and that way her nevuah was fulfilled. In fact, Rabbi Yonas and Ibershit says, since Yaakov Avinu lo meis, then you could say that he didn't actually, you could say that, so to speak, he didn't actually pass away until they actually buried him. So therefore, the nevuah actually came true in a certain sense. Maushon, by the way, points out that pasuk Zoda Rishoyim Merochim is part of Kapitel Nun Ches in Tillim, and you actually see there are other, the pasuk Yismach Tzadik Yichozen Nokom is towards the end of Kapitel Nun Ches, and you actually see there are other psukim in that capital that also hint at various parts of the story that we were just talking about. For example, it starts out saying Zoda Rishoyim Merochim, the Rishoyim are already estranged from the womb, and that refers to Esau, where we know even in the womb he was trying to get out to worship Avodah Zarah. And then the pasuk goes on to say that he speaks divrei kozav, he speaks false words, which is referring to over here where he falsely claims that he didn't sell his portion in the Maris Machpelah. That's in Donim, one side. And so on and so forth, and we see different psukim over there that hint. You have the pasuk mentioned the deaf snake asher lo yishma l'kol malachim, so that refers to Chushim ben Don, where Don is compared to a snake. Chushim was saying was deaf. So that whole capital hints at everything that happened over here. Okay. So that was the story. So that's how Yaakov was buried. So the Gemara asks, okay, so what are you saying? So we're saying then that Yosef was the one who was primarily involved with burying Yaakov. The question is, the Eloi Osik Bey Yosef, Echav Loi Havim Aski Bey. So what, and if Yosef hadn't been involved, would the brothers not themselves have dealt with it? The Pasuk says that his sons, all of the brothers, together were involved in carrying the mitzvah. So therefore, when it came to the actual burial itself, why does the Pasuk say that Yosef is the one who buried Yaakov? So Omru, it means because the brothers said, Hanichuloi, they said, leave it to Yosef to do it. It's more of an honor to Yaakov that he should be buried by a king, by Yosef, who was almost a king, rather than by Hedyotis, by us. So therefore, yes, of course, they were all involved in the Leviah. And if Yosef hadn't been there, then they would have actually buried him. But since Yosef was there, they figured it's best to leave it to Yosef. It would be more honor for Yaakov. So therefore, we're saying, in turn, Midikanegimida, that Moshe took Yosef's bones out of Mitzrayim.
Another thing is, if it wasn't for Yosef to get permission from the
parties. We're not talking about the permission. We're talking about once they were already there. So once they were already there, then they're, Okay. So now the Mishnah continues, Milanu Godomi Yosef. So who is greater than Yosef, who Moshe took his bones out of Mitzrayim. So let's talk about that. Come see how precious mitzvahs were to Moshe Rabbeinu. When they're about to leave Mitzrayim, everybody else is busy getting all of the spoils from Mitzrayim. And whereas Moshe is involved in the mitzvah of finding Yosef's body. Now, to be sure, taking the wealth of Mitzrayim is also a mitzvah, but they were kind of going beyond even, Mephoshim explained, that they were going kind of beyond even what Hashem had told them to literally empty out Mitzrayim of all its wealth. So Moshe instead went to look for Yosef. As the Pasuk says, the one who's wise of heart will take mitzvahs. So Moshe is showing his wisdom that he realized, in other words, Marashah says, he considered, like having this week's Pirkei Avos, Hefsid Mitzvah, Keneged Schara, yes, he's going to lose out, because he's not going to get the wealth of Mitzrayim, but on his share of the wealth of Mitzrayim, but on the other hand, he's going to get such an enormous mitzvah instead, and then that outweighs it. So how did Moshe know where Yosef is buried? Omru, so they said, Sarach bas Osher nishtaira me'osadur. Sarach bas Osher was left over from that generation. She was still alive. Holach Moshe etzla. So Moshe went to her to ask her. Now, Tosfos points out that there were other people who were still alive. For example, there were children of Menashe who were born in Yaakov's times. It mentions at the end of Chumash Bereshis, and they were still alive at the time. So why did Moshe have to go to Sarach? Why didn't he ask them?
It was direct.
What? This is also direct.
The children were born after it.
No, so that's the thing. The pasuk at the end of Parashas Vayechi, at the end of Chumash Bereishis, says that even Machu ben Menashe's children. No, actually, that's Yud Rabirke Yosef. But what you have is the Gemara mentions in Baba Basra that Machir and Yoyer, who were sons of Menashe, Machir, the son of Menashe, and Yoyer, who eventually married into the family of Menashe, they were both born when Yaakov was still alive, and then they were certainly alive when Yosef was there, when Yosef passed away, even their children were already, and they were still alive in Moshe's time. So why did Moshe not ask them? Why did he have to ask Sarah? So Tosfos answers that the secret of the Geula had been given over to Sarah, that she was the one who told them that when a person comes and says pocket pakadi, then you'll know that he's the true goyel, because after all, you have the whole thing where Bnei Ephraim left 30 years early and they were killed by the Plishtim, so they needed a simon. So therefore, so once she had validated his credentials to say that he's the true goyel, so now when he needed to know where Yosef is in order to take him out of Mitzrayim, so he went to her as well. Different point is also that Mephoshim say she is the one who, to begin with, told Yaakov that Yosef is alive. So therefore, it's very appropriate that now she should sort of finish the job and tell Moshe. Uh, so So he asks her, by any chance, do you know where Yosef is buried? She tells him, the Mitzvim made for him a coffin made out of metal, and they put it in the Nile River, so that the waters of the river should be blessed in his chus. And of course, there was also that this way, a medrash mentioned a different point as well, that this way they figured the Jewish people won't be able to dredge it out of there, and then they'll be stuck in Mitzrayim, because they won't be able to keep their promise. Anyway, because after all, they had promised, you know, Yosef had made them promise, he had made them swear that they were going to take him out. But the pasuk says that Vayashba Yosef as Echav, he made his brothers swear that they're going to take him out. So it was binding on the whole Jewish people. Halach Moshe v'omer al sfas Nilus. So Moshe went and stood by the river, by the banks of the Nilus. Omer lo, he says, Yosef, higia es shenishba HaKadosh Baruch Hu shani goylas. The time has come when Hashem swore that I'm going to take you out of Golos. V'higia shvur shenishesh baita as Yisrael. And the time for your shvur that you beswore the Jewish people has come. Imat mara atzmacha mutav. So if you show yourself so that we can take you out and bury you in Eretz Yisrael mutav, then good. V'imlab harayinu menukin. If not, then we're free of your shvua, because then we can't do it. The Taz, in fact, in Hilchos Shvuos learns from here a halacha that when you have a shvua that was made on a tnai, where you, Yosef, said that when the time comes that you're going to be taken out of Mitzrayim, I want you to come with me. Then, if the shvua cannot be accomplished at that point because of circumstances beyond their control, then they are potter from it forever. So that's why Moshe has to stress over here, the time for your shvua has come. In other words, Moshe is saying, don't think, Yosef, that even if we don't come, that even if we can't get you now, we'll have to come back for you at some future date to fulfill the shvua. No, if you don't show yourself now, then we're potter from the shvua forever. So miyad sof arona shel Yosef. So right away, Yosef's coffin floated to the surface. Now you shouldn't wonder how could heavy iron float. You have a story much later involving the Navi Elisha. Now, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu accomplished many nisim that Hashem gave him to do, but a nest like this, that something heavy should float, you don't find ever by Moshe. Nevertheless, don't be surprised, because you see with Elisha something similar. The pasuk describes how Elisha's Talmidim are building themselves a new base medrash near the Yarden River. They're chopping down trees to build it. And the pasuk says, one person was felling a tree to make a beam. There's a barzel nuffel on a mayim, and the axe head fell into the iron axe head fell into the water. And the Talmud is very concerned. He says, "What am I going to do, Rebbe? That I borrowed it. I don't even have money to pay back the owner." And he says, "Aha, Adoni, who shall Oyve, my master, it's borrowed by Yoma Isha the Kim on a Nofo." So the Isha the Kim, Elisha says, "Where did it fall?" So the man, so the Talmud showed him the place. By Yikts of Eitz, Elisha cut off a piece of wood. By Yashlech Shama, and he threw it there into the water. By Yotzev Habarzo, and the iron axe head floated to the surface. Some of the Mefarshim explain, in other words, that actually what happened was B'derech Nes, the wood was exactly what happened was that Elisha cut a piece of wood exactly the size of the axe handle, and B'derech Nes it joined up with the axe head, and then made the whole thing float. Even though usually it'd be the other way around, the axe head would drag down the wood, but here a Nes happened. So now the point is, and then the guy was able to pick it up.
Yes, they were also, but yeah, actually, you were something about the metal. You spoke about something that kept that. No. Something that then Ness came up.
You're talking, you know, you're thinking of the reed that Gabriel stuck into the water, and then the whole city of Rome flew around it. Madach Elisha is a Talmud of Eliyahu, who in turn is a Talmud of Moshe, and yet Sof Barzel Mikonov, and yet iron floated because Elisha told it to. So name Moshe Rabbeinu, Allah has come kama, how much more so that Moshe Rabbeinu should have the ability to accomplish such a nes? So not only when Hashem told him to do nisim, as of course then they happen, but even Moshe on his own initiative is able to make such a nes happen. So that's how they were able to find Yosef's coffin, and then they brought him to Eretz Yisrael.
It's a shame that it's really to bring it up.
That's something that's a different. There's a medrash that says that that he threw in a shame. Or Gemara is not mentioning that.
It's the same shame that he threw.
And then later on, it's the same shame that the Micha used to create the eagle. Yeah, that's a different. The medrash says that. Yeah. Okay. Rav Nosson Omer. Rav Nosson says a different way. It wasn't that Yosef's coffin was in the Nile, but kabo nitcha malachim hayakover. Instead, he says that Yosef was buried in the place where in the burial places of the kings. It actually explains that kabonit is a Greek word that means a burial place, a crypt where they bury you, maybe like in the pyramids or whatever. Yosef was buried over there. But again, which coffin is which? Holach Moshe, v'omer ha-kabonit shamalachim. So again, Moshe goes and stands over there by the crypt where all the kings are buried. And again, omer Yosef, yigia es shenishba ha-kodesh baruch ha-shan yigoy laschem. The time has come that Hashem promised that I'm going to redeem you. V'yigia shvur sheyishbayta es Yisrael. The time where the time for the shvur that you beswore the Jewish people has come. Imat amara atzmacha. So if you show yourself mutav, then good, then we can take you. V'im lav harayinu nukin mishvascha. If not, then we're cleansed of your shvur. But oisashon is dazdeyar and ishar Yosef. So at that moment, Yosef's coffin started shaking. So now we can recognize it. Now it's vibrating. You can recognize it among all the other coffins. Not by Moshe, but via Etzli. So Moshe took it and brought it with him.
Doesn't say where the brothers are in this one.
Where all the other brothers? The other brothers, the Mitzrayim, had no reason to hide them. They didn't have any particular. They didn't feel that they depend on their source. They figured that there's no shvua to take them out that'll prevent the Jewish people. So Mashkus, the brothers, everybody else was able to keep track of. But yeah, okay. So v'chol oisin shonim show Yisrael b'midbar hoyu shnei aronis halolu echad shomes ve'echad shoshchina mahalkin zemzeh. Throughout all the time the Jewish people were wandering in the desert, these two coffins, these two aronis, these two boxes, one of the mess of Yosef and one of the shchina, the oron with the luchas in it, mahalkin zemzeh, were walking one next to the other. So passers-by who would see the Jewish people going through the desert would wonder, what's the deal with these two boxes? In fact, Ben Yehoyada points out the box containing Yosef must have been larger than the Aron. The Aron was only 1.5 by 2.5 amas. The one for Yosef had to be at least 4 amas long. Obviously, the one with the Aron is going a little bit ahead because it contains the Shchina is resting on it and has the Luchas in it. So people are wondering, why is the small box going in front of the big one? And the Jewish people would answer, Amru, Echad Shal Mes Ve'Echad Shal Shchina. One is of a dead person, and the other one is of the Shchina. So the Goyim would wonder, since when do you have a dead person going along with the Shchina? Amru, so the Jewish people would answer, this one deserves it. Kiyim Zeh Kol Mashikos Vezeh. This one, Yosef, who's in this coffin, kept everything that it says in this, in the Luchas that it says in the other Aron. Rashi brings from a mechilta that you find individually about each of the Aseres Adibris. We find psukim where we see that Yosef kept them. For example, it says Anoichi Hashem Alekecha, and Yosef himself says Hasachas Alekim Ani. The Anoichi, using the same word Anoichi. Do you think that I'm instead of Hashem, that you brothers are worried about what I'm going to do to you? For example, you have Lo Yilcha Alekim Acherim, and in return for that, Yosef says, Esalikimani Yore. He says in Parashas Miketz, in the middle of the whole story with the brothers, he says, I fear Hashem. In other words, I wouldn't worship anything else. So when you go through like that, you find that he loisisa, and instead when he had to swear falsely in the whole play act with the brothers, then instead he swears in Pare's name rather than Hashem's name, and so on and so forth. So you see that he kept all the dibris.
He
didn't tell Pare, he told the brothers. Oh, that's something else. He told them they blackmailed him. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta.
When he was telling him what the dream meant.
No. He said, Elokim Yanes Shlem Pare. He said, Hashem will answer Pare's peace. He didn't actually say the words, Elokim Ani Yore. That was with the brothers, where after he had arrested them and imprisoned them for 3 days, and now he's saying, I'll let you all go free except for Shimon. So he says, Elokim Ani Yore. So we see that Yosef kept all the dibris, so therefore he deserves to go together with the Aron. Okay, so again, the Gemara asks, the Eloi Osik Bei Moshe Yisrael Lehavim Yaskibei. So what? And if Moshe had not been involved with burying Yosef, wouldn't the rest of the Jewish people have done it as well? V'hoksib, in fact, the Pasuk says at the end of Sefer Yoshua, V'es Atzmas Yosef Asher Helu B'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim Kovru B'Shem, the bones of Yosef, that the Jewish people brought out of Mitzrayim, they buried in Shechem. So the rest of the Jewish people were involved as well. Now, granted, Marashal says, of course, at the time when they were leaving Mitzrayim, we said everybody else was busy gathering the wealth of Mitzrayim, and only Moshe was involved. But throughout the 40 years, Moshe kept on taking care of the coffin. He kept it. In fact, the Gemara elsewhere explains that we learn from this that even a mess himself, let alone a tummy mess, is allowed to be in Machna Leviyah, because Moshe himself was a Levi and he had Yosef's coffin with him all the years. So the question is, now that they're not dealing with the wealth of Mitzrayim, why did they not take it over from Moshe? Why did they leave Moshe to deal with the coffin the whole 40 years? So the reason is, again, like we said before, and the Gemara asks anyway, but true, and furthermore, you have to ask, Eloi Askube, even if the rest of the Jewish people, you're going to say, didn't want to get involved, Eloi Askube Yisrael, if the rest of the Jewish people weren't involved with him, Bonav Loi Havu Maskele, wouldn't at least his own sons, his own descendants have taken care of him? V'oksiv, v'yu levnei Yosef v'nachla. The Pasuk continues, they became for a nachla, for Shevet Yosef, like they considered it an honorable, great honorable thing that they have Yosef buried in their nachla. The answer is again Omru, because they all said Hanichuloi, it leave Yosef that the reason is, so to answer the second question first, Omru, the descendants of Yosef said Hanichuloi, leave him and let the whole Jewish people be involved with him. Kvoidib Medrubim Yosef Mimwatin, it's more honorable that he should be buried, that he should be taken care of by the great number of people, by the whole Jewish people, more than just the minority of the Jewish people, only our Shevet. And then Omru, but meanwhile, the other Jewish people said, Hanichu loy, let Moshe do it. Kvodeh b'dolim Yosef m'ktanim. It's more honorable for Yosef to be dealt with by Moshe, who's the greatest person, rather than by all of us. So that's why it ended up being so sort of one group passed the buck to the other, and therefore it ended up that Moshe was taking care of Yosef's coffin all those years, and only the fact is Moshe didn't go into Eretz Yisrael, so then the Jewish people took it over. It doesn't specifically. I mean, we know they took out the bodies of the brothers as well, but it doesn't actually say.
No.
Why? No, it doesn't specifically say that Moshe was involved in. Okay. So the Gemara says, now, by the way, the pasuk that we quoted says that they buried Yosef in Shechem. So the question is, Kovru b'Shechem, Maishna b'Shechem. Why particularly in Shechem? Now, fine, of course, they wanted to bury him in the Nachla of Yosef, and Shechem is in that Nachla, but there's many other places they could have buried him. Why Dafke in Shechem? Because originally they kidnapped him from Shechem, so they figured we should return the lost object to the place where it was taken from. Because the whole thing, where he met up with the brothers, now Rashi points out that in the Pesukim over there, so he came to Shechem, and then he's lost over there, and he meets up with a man who was Malach Gavriel, and then the Malach tells him that they are in Doisa. So on the face of it, the sale took place in Doisan. However, Rashi over here explains that Doisan is not actually the name of a place. It means that when it says they went to Doisan, Doisan stands for Nichle Dosis. They have plans and plots, bad intentions against you, but Yosef didn't take the hint. So the point is, therefore, but it actually took place in Shechem. With that said, Rashi in other places says differently. Rashi in Sanhedrin says that Doisan is the name of a village near Shechem, and therefore, that it can be called by the name of Shechem, which was the main city in the area. So it wasn't actually in the city of Shechem itself, but it was close enough to be considered as if it was part of the city. Anyway, so that's why they buried him dafke in Shechem. So the Gemara says Koshu Kroy Adoni. Now you seem to have a contradiction in the Pesukim. See, by Yikach Moshe as Atzmes Yosef imo. First, you have it says that Moshe took Yosef's bones with him. Uchtives Atzmes Yosef asher helu bnei Yisrael v'goymer. But then it says the bones of Yosef that bnei Yisrael had taken out of Mitzrayim. So who was it? Was it Moshe? Or was it the whole Jewish people? So Omer Rav Chama Bar Chanina, Kola Oisa Dova V'loy Gomrei, when a person does a mitzvah and he doesn't complete it, as in this case, where Moshe couldn't complete the job because he didn't go into Eretz Yisrael, Uvo Acha B'Gomrei, and somebody else comes and completes the mitzvah, Mala Olav HaKosev Alsha Gomrei Kilo Asoi. The Posev counts it on behalf of the one who finished it as though he did the whole thing. So since the Jewish people finished the job, then therefore the posit credits them as they were the ones who accomplished it. So in other words, Maharsho explains that to begin with, Moshe deserves the credit because again, everybody else was busy with Bizas Mitzrayim when he took the initiative. But afterwards, one was saying when they could have continued taking care of it throughout the 40 years in the desert and they didn't because they figured it's best that Moshe, that's greater covered for Moshe to do it. So they would have done it if it hadn't been for that. And as soon as Moshe has gone, they did take it over. Then therefore they deserve the credit and therefore the Pasuk counts it as though to begin with, they took him out of Mitzrayim. Rabbi Loza goes further and says if a person begins a mitzvah and doesn't complete it, then actually he gets lowered down from his greatness. Hashem causes him to lose his greatness. Now, it's one thing Moshe, of course, it was an onus, he couldn't, but in an ordinary case where a person begins a mitzvah and then gets lazy or whatever and doesn't complete it, then Hashem causes him to lose his greatness. Dichtiv, as we find in the pasuk by Hebrew, Esaihi vayered Yehuda. As we find, at that time, Yehuda went down. Meaning, what happened? So Yosef was sold, and we said, and we have over there that Yehuda had begun the job of saving Yosef, because he told the brothers, don't kill him. But instead of completing it, he said, let's sell him to the Ishmaelim. So therefore, he began the mitzvah, but didn't complete it. And therefore, the result was vayered Yehuda. He went down, that he lost his high position among the brothers. Rashi on the Pasuk mentions, in fact, that the brothers blamed him for the fact that Yaakov is in such grief, and therefore they demoted him, and until now he had been their leader, now they demoted him. Another point, the Minchas Sota makes a point. What about Reuben? He also began but didn't finish. The difference is Reuben was onus because he had to go serve his father, whereas Yehuda was not. So therefore Yehuda is blamed for it, and therefore he lost his gula. Rab Shmuel ben Achmeni Omer Af Koyve Ishto Yovanov. Rab Shmuel ben Achmeni says not only that, but a person who does that begins a mitzvah and doesn't complete it ends up having to bury his wife and children. Dichtiv VaTomas Bashua Ishes Yehuda Vagamer. As the pasuk says that Bashua, the wife of Yehuda, passed away. Ochtiv VaYomas Erev Oinan. A few pasukim earlier, it says that Aaron Oinan. If you actually, this is a summary from later on in VaYigash, that Aaron Oinan died. So we see that. So even though now Aaron Oinan had their own averus, but still, it wouldn't have happened if it weren't for the fact that Yehuda bore a certain amount of the blame. Okay, the Gemara continues. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Mifnei man nikra Yosef at somos b'chayim. Why is Yosef called bones even while he's alive? When Yosef beswore the Jewish people that they should take him out of Mitzrayim, he said, v'halisim asat smoysai mizeh. So why did it use the word, why did it use the expression atzmos? So the reason is because he did not protest for the honor of his father, because the brothers told him, your servant, our father, and he didn't tell them anything. He didn't protest that you shouldn't be calling him my servant. It happened quite the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer mentioned that it happened 10 times, and because of that, he lost 10 years of his life. He should have lived to 120, and instead, he lived to 110.
Which is the age of his father?
His father was 147. So the Zohar actually says that Yosef gave away years of his life to David HaMelech, but still, the Medrash says that he should have had 10 more years, but he lost that because he heard them saying 10 times, Abdecha Avinu, and he didn't protest. Of course, you know, if he had said, yeah, this is my father, he would have blown his cover, but still, he could have told them, listen, I don't know who this Yaakov is, but he's older than me, and he's your father, you shouldn't be calling him Abdecha in my presence. Yeah. Anyway, so because of that, yeah. Why did Yosef pass away before all his brothers? Because he exercised leadership. He was the prime minister of Mitzrayim, and because he acted in this way that he didn't protest when they called him Abdechavim. So because of all of that, also is why he was called Atzamos in a degrading way, even when he was alive.
He called himself,
but in like Nibo Vein Yedem An Nibo, like he said it without even knowing what he means by that. Yeah. Okay. So, by the way, as far as the previous thing, Koiva Ishto Yobono, Marsha points out, after all, it's true, Aaron Oinon had a Verus of their own, but they were only 7 or 8 years old at the time, the Medrash calculates, based on the Psukim over there. So they wouldn't have been Chayiv Misa for it, were it not for the fact that Yehuda had failed to finish a mitzvah, and therefore, the two things joined together, like the fact that Yehuda was to blame for not finishing the job of saving Yosef, plus Aaron Oinon's individual events.
But they were so young.
The Medrash calculates that they're only 7 or 8 years old. Yeah, because the whole thing, only after Yosef was sold, did Yehuda go and marry Bathsheba, and he had children, and then they have the whole thing with Tamar, and he had Peretz and Zerach. And by the time they came down to Mitzrayim, Peretz himself had children. So therefore, if you calculate it, now there are Mefoshim. I think the Eben Ezra, for example, learns that Ein Mukdam or Ochabat Torah, and Yehuda may have married beforehand, and the children were older. But the Medrash says that not.
He also buried his wife.
That's what we're saying. Okay, yeah. Next, talking more about Yosef and Mitzrayim, the pasuk is that Yosef hurad Mitzrayim. Yosef was brought down to Mitzrayim. So why the word brought down? Amar Elazar, al tikri hurad ela hurid. Don't read hurad, he was brought down, but rather hurid, he caused to bring down. He caused Pare's astrologers to be demoted from their position, because eventually when Pare had his dream and they didn't know how to interpret it, so Pare demoted them. The post continues, Vayikneu Potiphar Sris Pare. Potiphar, a minister of Pare, bore him. So Amarav Sheknoi La'atzma, when it says he bought him, means he bought him for himself. He intended to use him for immoral purposes, because Yosef was very handsome. So he intended to use him for Mishkav Zoch. Bo Gavriel V'serisoi. So Gavriel came and castrated him and then prevented him from ever being able to do that again. Bo Gavriel Aperoi. And then Gavriel came and not only castrated him, not only made him infertile, but made him like in a very serious way. Like he couldn't even do anything anymore. And how do we know that? First, he's called Potiphar. Later on, when it says that Yosef married his daughter, then he calls him Potipherah. So the word Potipherah, the word Perah means. So Rashi actually says the word Bog Avriel Veserus doesn't belong in the Gemara. It means that Perah means. Rashi says means Sirus Yisera, means an extra harsh Sirus. So not only like he made him infertile, but he made him like it's impossible for him to be able to even do anything in that regard. So therefore he's called Potipherah, where the word peraz related to the word peroi, indicating what Gavriel had done to him to prevent him from molesting Yosef.
It's a little loose fair, because it says also that he told his wife what happened with Yosef during.
Well, no, the other way around. His wife told him, right?
But it could be that means when they were in the room.
Whatever. But also, the vote can be. In other words, that he may not have been able to actually. They could be doing other things. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, okay. The Mishnah continued. Milanu Gadol miMoshe v'Cholo. Who is greater than Moshe? Where Hashem Himself buried him. So let's talk about that. So the pasuk is by Yomer Hashem Eli Ravloch. Hashem said to me, Moshe tells over, and in Parshas Vayis Chanan, he says, Hashem said to me, enough for you. Don't keep on asking to go into Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rav Levi, B'Rav Biser, B'Rav Bisru. Moshe had told B'nai Levi, using the word Rav, and therefore he himself was told, Min HaShemayim, also with the word Rav. But Rav Biser, he said, Rav Lochem, in the story of Korach, he says to them, enough for you, B'nai Levi, don't try to go to a higher position than you belong. So therefore, Rav Bisruhu Rav Loch. The Ma'arav explains, in other words, that even though, of course, Moshe had to tell off Korach's group and tell them they're doing wrong, he shouldn't have used such an expression, enough for you, you have enough level of Kedusha, you don't need more, you shouldn't have discouraged them from trying to seek higher levels of Kedusha. And therefore, Min HaShemayim is told the same thing, don't try to seek higher levels and go into Eretz Yisrael. Davar Acher, another explanation, Rav Loch, means Rav Yesh Loch, means you have a Rebbe, you have a Rebbe whose time it is to be ruling, to be guiding the Jewish people. Umanu Yeshua, namely it's Yeshua's time, and therefore so your Malchus has to be over, because one Malchus doesn't interfere with the other, even Kochot Asayla. Davar Acher, another explanation. Rav Loch means Hashem is telling Moshe, stop asking me. Shaloi Yomru, you don't want people to say Harav Kama Kosha, the Talmud Kama Sarban. Look how harsh the Rebbe is that Hashem is not allowing Moshe to go in, and how disobedient the Talmud is that he keeps on asking again and again. We're not disobedient. Sarban, Rashi explains, means Sarban doesn't mean disobedient. Sorry, Rashi says that it means to beg. How much the Talmud is begging over and over, and yet the Rebbe Hashem is ignoring him. So I don't want people to say that. So stop asking. So v'chol kach lama, why indeed so much? Taka, why did Hashem allow Moshe to go into Eretz Yisrael? Tonet v'Rabbi Shmuel, l'fum gam l'shichana, according to the expression goes, according to the camel's load, the stronger the camel, the heavier the load it can carry. So the same way, because Moshe was such an enormous tzaddik, therefore medaktik, tzaddik, and therefore the little thing that he had done wrong was held very strongly against him. The pasuk says, "Vayomer aleim ben meyav esrim shana anochi hayoyim." Moshe tells the Jewish people, "I'm 120 years old today." She'ein tamud lema hayoyim. Now, why does he need to say hayoyim? Means hayoyim molu yomai ushnoisai. Today, my days and my years are filled up. I'm exactly 120 years old. L'lamedcha. So this teaches you, Shachodesh Baruch Hu mashlim shenishneim shal tzedikim miyoyim liyoyim mechodesh lachodesh. That Hashem fills up the years of tzedikim from day to day and from month to month. Hashem makes sure that they actually that they're lives are completely filled to the day. Dichtivas mispar yamecha amale, as the pasuk says, I will fill up the number of your days. The Rebbe once talked about the idea, or probably more than one time. We see that the Golui by the Mittel Rebbe, where he was born and passed away on Tess Kislev. By most tzaddikim, you only have that behelem, you only have that in a hidden way. But sometimes there are certain exceptional tzaddikim where you see it begashmius, as you have that example. Moshe continues, Lo uchal oid lotzis v'lavoy. He continues, I can't go in and I can't go out. I can't go out and go in. So what does that mean? My lotzis v'lavoy. Lemon lotzis v'lavoy mamash. Does Moshe literally mean I can't go in and out, as in I can't walk anymore? Well, k'siva Moshe ben meyav esrim shana b'moso, lo nos lechay. The pasuk continues, and it said, the pasuk says that he's 120 when he passed away, and his freshness had not gone away. Uchtiv vayal Moshe me'aris moyav al ha'nevoy. And the pasuk also says that Moshe went up from Aris Nevoy, from Aris Moyav to Ha'nevoy. V'tanya, and we learn in a braisa, Shteim Esrim Milas Hoyusham. There were 12 steps, 12 levels to go from Aris Moyav, which was a plain, which was a flat, which was flatlands, all the way up to Ha'nevoy. Upos and Moshe v'psia achas. And Moshe walked it all in one step. And Maharsha explains, the reason is, because why is it up to say, Arvis Moyav? We know Arvis Moyav was where they were at the time. So therefore, the Pasuk wants to stress that he went all the way from Arvis Moyav all the way to the top of Ha'nevoy all at once. So we see that Moshe was still very, very strong. Amar Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar Rav Yonasan, lots is for love of the divrei Torah. Right, what Moshe means is I can't go out and I can't go in words of Torah, melamed, this teaches us that the gates of Chochmah were hidden from him, and therefore he doesn't have the ability to teach Torah on the high level that he was before. That's what he means, lots is for love. So the pasuk says, "Vayelach Moshe v'Yeshua v'isyatzvu ba'oyel moed." Moshe and Yeshua went and stood in oyel moed. Tonev, we learn in a brayso, "Oisa Shabbos shel diuzgi hoisa." Shall du zugi hoisa. That Shabbos was a Shabbos of a pair, of two pairs, meaning that on that Shabbos, where Moshe Rabbeinu passed away on Shabbos, there were two leaders of the Jewish people. Nitla Rishus Mizev, Nitla Lazer, the Rishus to lead the Jewish people was taken from Moshe and given to Yeshua. And therefore, on that day, uniquely, you had that Moshe and Yeshua are leading the Jewish people. So that's what we mean. In other words, Nistat Menu, Shari Chachma, that the gates of Chachma were closed off for Moshe and they were opened up for Yeshua. And we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with the analyzing more of the Psukim about what happened when Moshe passed away.
And also Moshe wanted he should see that he's that during his life he's
that he was there, yeah. The Rashi mentions on the Psukim, yeah, that Moshe gave Yeshua Rishus to lead the Jewish people during his lifetime, so everybody should respect Yeshua, right? Yeah. So, yeah.